Good day, everyone. Thank you for joining us at Financial Podcast. My name is Darlene, and I'm your host. Now, I imagine that some of you have clients that invest in real estate, or maybe you do yourself. Many of us have likely seen those programs on TV where people flip homes or use them for investment income domestically and abroad. Most of those programs are from the U.S., which would have a completely different set of tax laws than what we have in Canada. So today, we have an expert in taxation with us. Natalie Eunice is a professional accountant who has been in the business of taxes, apparently, by accident no less, for about 25, 26 years. Hello, Natalie. Thank you for joining us today. Natalie, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background?
Hello, and thank you for having me. I have accidentally fell into tax many, many years ago. To be honest, 1995 is the exact year. That also ages me a little bit, but I'm 18 years old with some experience, you know. So I've initially started working in the area of HST, switched to income taxation. I've also been in fuel taxes, airport taxes, anything to do with tax. And lately, real estate has really been on my mind because a whole slew of my clients have been trying to invest or divest from their real estate ownership, which brought quite a number of questions on their end. And I'm sure you have the same ones.
Well, we've got lots of questions today. It's a very complex and confusing subject for many of us. What are the tax implications to consider when investing in real estate?
Wow, that's a very, very big question, as there are many, many things we need to consider. One of the big things that one needs to contend with is the capital gain or loss on the investment. This is likely your secondary property, which means it will be subject to taxation on eventual sale. As you may have heard, capital gain on your primary residence is sheltered by primary residence exemption, which means that no tax is paid on the primary residence disposition. However, capital gain or loss on rental property is not sheltered. It needs to be reflected on your tax return. How it is taxed depends on how the property was used. Was it held in inventory for future sale? Was it rented out? Was it a flip?
Can you elaborate on that for us for a bit?
Yes, of course. Capital gains are usually taxed at beneficial rates. Currently, only 50% of the gain is taxable. That makes it quite enticing for the investor to ensure that the profits realized on the transaction is treated as a capital gain as opposed to regular income. The determination of whether the profit will be treated as a regular income, and therefore 100% of the profit will be taxed, or capital gain, 50% of income inclusion, is based on individual situations. Generally, however, if the house was held in inventory or if the person is engaged in constant buying and selling, Canada Revenue Agency will likely determine that those transactions are considered income in nature and will want to tax it fully. If a person rents out the property or a few properties, of course, and sells them from time to time, not very frequently, it is likely to be considered a capital gain.
So is there any difference in tax rates if I were to hold real estate for a long period of time?
You're probably referring to the U.S. rule where holding investment property for less than 1 year results in higher tax rates being paid. There is no such a rule in Canada. Long-term or short-term investments are taxed at the year of disposition. No tax benefit is realized for longer holding periods.
Oh, okay. So how does one calculate a capital gain or loss?
Oh, this is an excellent question. It comes to me every year. It's not a simple one. In simple terms, capital gain or loss is the difference between the sale price and the cost of the property. While the sale price is fairly easy to determine, well, that would be the selling price minus legal costs and real estate commission, the actual adjusted cost base of the property is not as simple. And when I say adjusted cost base, that's the total cost of your property, whatever you put into it. And because you may have purchased it many years ago, you may have done certain things to adjust the cost base. So the cost of the property starts with the purchase price. Then we need to add closing costs, legal, land transfers, fees, any costs for arranging financing, maybe inspection, and anything else you paid to secure the property. After that, we need to add the cost of any major renovations that were done to the property during the ownership period. These are the costs that were not expensed as part of the rental activities in the year. Usually it's something large, for example, refacing the exterior, maybe landscaping, replacing the kitchen, or building an addition. Many people do not realize how important it is to keep all the receipts and properly documenting all spending related to this investment. This is because it seems trivial when the expenses are being incurred, but really hard to put together when the property is being sold many years down the road.
Okay, so you mentioned expensing or not expensing some spend. What does that mean?
That's a very good question. Real estate investment is a business. As such, any profits or losses need to be reported to Canada Revenue Agency. To figure out the profit or loss of the activity for the year, we would normally prepare a rental income statement. That would list rental income and current expenses. Rental income includes regular rent plus any incidental income, such as income from pay-per-use laundry, parking spot, guest fees, any other fees that you're charging your tenants. Current expenses would include mortgage interest, and note, mortgage interest only, property tax, insurance, utilities, advertisement, legal and professional fees, regular maintenance. Remember, that does not include large capital items that we discussed earlier. And I would like to point out a very, very important difference here. Some investors look purely at cash flow. Cash flow includes repayments of principal. This portion is not deductible on your tax return. It's not part of your expenses. Only interest component of mortgage payment is deductible. Once you calculate the net position of income and all of your eligible deductions, and if the overall result is positive, this is income, which is taxed at individual or corporation's marginal tax rate. And if the result is negative, it would be included or actually deducted, from individuals' other income. Large expenses cannot be deducted in the year. They're added to the adjusted cost base and will factor into the capital gain calculation, exactly how we discussed earlier. And by the way, if you would like to receive a template of rental statement, please send me a quick email requesting it. I can be reached at natalie@taxwelldone.com.
Good address, Tax Well Done. It gives you confidence. So can I claim amortization of the building as an expense?
I've had this question asked time and time again. For those of you that may know it, amortization, it is also known as depreciation, is the reduction in the value of an asset, for example, a building, with the passage of time. Usually it's due to wear and tear. Over the past number of years, whether it's due to inflation or other factors, the value of the properties have appreciated, which means they increased in value. Therefore, it wouldn't make sense for you to claim amortization on annual basis, only to have it recaptured and, of course, tax paid in the year of sale. However, if the properties do decrease in value, an amortization expense is allowed to be claimed on annual basis. There is a prescribed rate or value that can be applied every year, but there is one restriction. Amortization cannot be used to create a loss in the year. The maximum amount of amortization that can be claimed in the year is a formula lesser of, so the smaller amount of the prescribed rate percentage of the amount, or the amount required to reduce profits down to zero. So you can bring your income to zero, but you cannot create a loss. And one thing to remember, very, very important, if the property was amortized throughout the year, but at the time of the sale, it was sold at a higher amount, the amortization is reversed and the entire amount of reversal is included in the income in the year of sale. It could potentially result in a hefty tax bill if a large amount of income has to be included in that one year.
Pays to have a good accountant then.
Of course.
So what happens if I don't have spare money to invest? Can I take the money out of my RSP and pay it back over a period of time?
Yes, that program is called Home Buyer's Plan. Home Buyer's Plan is a program that allows an individual to withdraw funds from your RSP to buy or build a qualifying home. The Home Buyer's Plan allows you to pay back the withdrawal within a 15-year period without any tax consequences. However, the devil is in the details. Qualifying home does not include really rental property. It only includes primary residence. The money must be withdrawn for the house for your own use. Hence, if you choose to withdraw money from your RRSP, the amount of withdrawal will be included in your income in the year of withdrawal. And by the way, unless RRSP withdrawal is done under the home buyer's plan, CRA will automatically deduct tax at the time of withdrawal and will only refund the net amount. So please don't expect to receive the full amount.
But earlier you touched upon another interesting point. Should somebody buy real estate personally, or would it be better to buy it through a corporation?
As with anything with tax, there is no one answer that would fit all. It all depends. It depends on the nature of the investment and the quantity of rental properties that are involved. Let's discuss the main benefits of using a corporation. They're mainly limitation of liability, not having to deal directly with the tenants, and tax savings, maybe yes, maybe no. Generally, investments are considered to be what we call passive income. Passive income is taxed within the corporation at higher rates than activities we call active business income. For individuals, there is no such distinction, except the only one that I mentioned with respect of taxation of the final sale of the property. But if we're talking about a multi-unit rental building, the business would be considered as active business, and it would be taxed at quite low tax rates that all corporations enjoy. Overall, corporate rate depends on the province you're located in. However, it varies between 25 and 31% for small to medium Canadian-controlled private corporations. And I make these distinctions because some of you may know what Canadian-controlled private corporations are, and some of you do not. So it's really a company that is owned by a person in Canada, Canadian citizen, Canadian resident, and that pays Canadian tax. So there are a few other criteria, but this is the main one. So going back, if you are considering holding one or a few houses, then holding such investment in a corporation may not be beneficial because it will likely be considered passive income and will be taxed at much higher rates, which is closely aligned with the personal tax rate. In addition, you need to think about how to take the money out from corporation after the property is sold. Remember, corporation owns the property and not you, not the individual. When the property is sold, the money stay in the corporation and the owner is faced with the dilemma on how to take this money out tax effectively. Given the large amount involved, it is not very easy, nor it is cheap.
No, that's becoming clear. So are there any considerations why a person may want or not want to hold real estate through a corporation?
Yes, there are. One need to consider the additional administration, for example, bookkeeping, carrying costs of maintaining a corporation if you decide to go that route. Corporation is a separate legal entity and needs to file its own tax returns, annual information returns, possibly GST, HST, PST returns. On the other hand, working through a corporation may provide an extra shield between tenant and landlord. And for some people, it is very, very important.
Yeah, I can see that. So in today's economy, many people will be looking at ways to increase or replace lost revenue. So they may be looking at suites within their home. Where the homeowners can create legal suites within the primary residence, what sort of tax implication would they be looking at?
Before we even look at the tax implications, I would highly suggest the person to check the local bylaws. Do they allow secondary dwelling units? There is really a wide range of possible outcomes. Some municipalities do not allow them at all, and the homeowner can be actually heavily fined, while other municipalities provide extra incentives in terms of grants or subsidies. Many municipalities require these secondary dwelling units to be registered. This would also require that they pass an inspection, and certain other activities need to be done by the owner. Once the legalities of creating a secondary dwelling unit have been sorted out, then we can direct our attention to tax matters. There are some good news or good developments in this area on tax front. Up until March 2019, if a person rented out part of their primary residence, there were quite negative repercussions. According to Canada Revenue Agency, such action would actually result in a deemed disposition of primary residence and its conversion to a rental. We call it change of use in tax. However, The budget announced in March 2019 allows a special form to be filed to elect that the deemed disposition that normally arises in such situation did not apply. And that means that no tax needs to be paid, no special activities need to be done if you decide to do that. However, to qualify, the secondary dwelling unit needs to satisfy certain requirements. So it has to be a rental or business use which is not significant in relation to the principal residence activities, or generally it means that you're not renting the whole house, you would be renting a smaller portion of your house or using the smaller portion of your house for business activities. The other requirement would be that no structural changes are done to the property to actually make it more suitable for rental or business purpose. And the last one is that no amortization is allowed on the part used for rental or business purposes. The next thing to consider is the ongoing income stream from renting activity. Similarly to renting out the whole property, the owner would need to calculate net income realized by this activity also. And net income, again, is the difference between rental revenues and the expenses incurred. So while rent net income is pretty easy, you figure out what your rental charge per month is and off you go, the expenses include only a portion of property taxes, mortgage, interest, utilities, maintenance. And I intentionally use the word portion. As you can appreciate, the property taxes and other expenses are paid for the entire property. And allocation has to be made to what is considered for personal use and what is for a rental component. Most people prorate the expenses based on square footage of the secondary dwelling unit versus the entire home, including the secondary dwelling. And that percentage is applied to all expenses to determine the eligible proportion to be claimed as a deduction. And any money that are earned through renting out part of the primary residence has to be declared on the owner's tax return.
Okay, so then does this apply to those who rent out rooms within their homes but not a separate suite?
Yes. For once, I can answer a question quickly. From tax standpoint, same rules apply for renting out individuals' rooms within home as a, you know, similarly to if you rented a whole home or whole part of the home. As anything with tax, everything is, it depends. This one is actually pretty straightforward. I'm glad.
Well, we are too. So if someone owns property in a foreign country now and they are able to rent it out, are there tax implications in both the foreign country and in Canada? And what would someone have to consider from CRA's standpoint before actually doing this?
This is a very, very common thing nowadays, especially with people having homes in Florida. Property ownership in a different country is obviously more complicated than having a property within Canada. The country where the property is located has the first claim at the taxes. This means that the person would actually need to prepare a rental statement similar to the one we discussed quite heavily earlier and use that to file that country's tax return based on that rental information. So let's consider property ownership in Florida, as this is most popular destination. The owner of the property would be required to file U.S. federal and state return and calculate the tax payable to United States, which is federal, and state of Florida. You would need to hire a local tax expert to do that, unless you're very good at foreign reporting. I highly don't recommend that because in certain states, they're not only state returns, but municipal returns and things like that. So I would highly recommend to hire a professional. Having said that, I can tell you that there are some exceptions to that tax if the income is minimal, for example. But unfortunately, I cannot comment on that since that's outside of my area of expertise. What I do know is that U.S. tax returns are due on April 15th of the following year. Once the tax return is filed, U.S. tax return, Florida tax return, the person would then need to declare this income on their Canadian tax return. And I would like to preempt your possible questions regarding double taxation. No, you would not pay tax twice, once to U.S. and once to Canada. There is a provision in tax law to account for the tax paid to the other jurisdiction. So when filing Canadian tax return, the tax that was paid to United States will be taken into consideration as foreign tax credit. There is a big caveat, though. Foreign tax credits can only be claimed if Canada has an income tax treaty. It's also known as income tax conventions. Some people use treaties, some people use income tax conventions. So if Canada signed an income tax treaty with that country, everything is good. But if it doesn't, that might be a problem. Currently, Canada has signed tax treaties with most countries. 94 countries, there are 8 countries are still under negotiation, renegotiations, and 3 have been signed but not yet in force. However, there are still a few that are left out. For example, Myanmar, Belarus. As a Canadian resident, each individual is liable for tax on their worldwide income. That would include any income generated in the countries with which Canada signed a treaty and those with which they didn't. And remember, if there is no tax treaty, you would likely pay double tax, as the mechanism of foreign tax credit does not apply to countries with which Canada did not sign the treaty. And another item that you should also consider in this situation is the requirement to file an additional information return. It's called T1135, Foreign Income Verification Statement. This is not exactly a tax payment form. It's an information return. This is where one needs to report any property with the cost of over 100,000 Canadian that is held outside of Canada. Doesn't necessarily have to be real estate. Any property that is held outside of Canada. An information return means that it's filed for information only. No tax is payable, but it puts you on CRA's radar and alerts them to watch and expect for some foreign income to be reported or disposition or something of that sort.
Wow. Wow. There's a lot of things to consider. So if I have property in another country, but I don't rent it out, what happens? Like if I just have a winter home in Florida and it's just there until I go, what's the tax implication? Sorry.
Excellent. If you don't rent it out, there is no income stream that needs to be reported. Therefore, no tax inclusion. However, please remember that if you're not showing it on your tax return because it is your secondary property, like your vacation home, you cannot deduct any expenses with respect to that property. And since I mentioned the form T1135 earlier, that the foreign income verification statement, I should also mention that the property that is used for personal use only does not need to be reported on T1135. It's only for income-bearing properties and not secondary residence. So personal use property is generally defined as property owned by the taxpayer that he or she or a related party uses primarily for personal or enjoyment purposes. Also, an owner of a property in a foreign country have to be cognizant of that country's filing requirements. It could be full tax return or a simple information return. For example, we discussed U.S. requires people that spend prolonged periods of time in U.S. to file an information return, just to state how long they've lived there and, you know, just the fact that they didn't earn any money. But each country has its own requirements. I would highly recommend consulting a local professional in that country.
Yeah, again, you know, nothing is simple, like you've stated before. But getting away from foreign investment and foreign real estate, is it better to buy the property for cash or to get a mortgage?
This is not entirely a tax question, but I get it all the time. Many, many people are trying to figure out what is better for them. From tax standpoint, if you pay interest on the mortgage, it is deductible from the income generated by the rental property. If we look at purely investment point of view, your return on investment will be higher if you get a mortgage. This is because you're investing only, let's say, 20% of the funds, but realize the same appreciation. Mortgage interest, of course, plays a factor reducing your return on investment because it increases your expenses, but you will likely notice that return on investment will still be higher with a mortgage. Don't take my word for it, though. You can calculate it yourself.
Wow, another thing to consider. So we talked about house flips earlier and those programs in the U.S. where house flipping seems to be a little bit more common. What is the definition of a flip in Canada?
So there is really no specific definition of a flip for tax purposes. You know, we have the Tax Act, which defines certain terms and words and what they mean. Flip is not one of them. So we actually have to turn to the normal standard definition of a flip. However, According to CRA, if a house is bought and sold within a short period of time for a profit, it's considered to be a flip, which would mean that 100% of the profit from flipping real estate is generally taxable as business income, as opposed to capital gain. Capital gain, remember, only 50% is taxable. Never ever does the principal residence exemption apply to the flips. There has been actually a number of court cases trying to clarify this situation, whether it is considered to be a flip, whether a person lived there for a short period of time would make it a primary residence. Unfortunately, all of them have been decided in the favor of CRA being 100% taxable. And because there is no true definition of what constitutes a flip, each situation needs to be assessed separately and considered, especially if there is a history of buying and selling property. And even if the person purchased the property and even lived there for a short time before selling it for profit, it may still be considered a flip by CRA if the individual has done it repeatedly in the past.
And of course, house flipping discussion wouldn't be complete if we don't talk about condo reassignments. So can you offer us some insight into that?
Yeah, condo reassignment is very, very popular in Canada, and I've noticed it across the country. Originally, I thought it might be specific to a certain, let's say Calgary or Toronto, but it seems to be universal, at least across the provinces that anywhere I looked. So just to make sure that everybody is on the level playing field with the terminology, condo reassignment is where an individual signs up to purchase a pre-construction condo and then reassigns their rights to condo to another individual before taking possession of the unit. So Canada Revenue Agency has issued a specific pronouncement on this particular issue and clearly stated that the profits derived from this transaction would be considered income, not a capital gain. That, of course, means that the tax will be much higher, as the tax would be payable on the whole amount of the profit and not only the 50% that would be the case with capital gains.
How would CRA ever know about it?
Yeah, I know many people are thinking about that. And some people believe that they can play what I call audit roulette. This is where they believe that their activities are not visible to CRA. I talked to a number of CRA auditors during CRA liaison meetings, and you have to understand that CRA is a very sophisticated, technologically savvy. They have tremendous data mining resources. CRA analyzes third-party data, and they realize that some flips are not being reported, or if they are reported, they're not being reported correctly. And it's not only flips, it's also reassignments, it's also sales of rental properties and such. This is an area of high risk, according to Canada Revenue Agency, and they're paying very, very special attention to this area. So don't think that you can avoid taxes by not showing it on your tax return. CRA has long-reaching arms, and they can find it through the land registry, through a whole slew of other sources, and it's not unusual to receive a letter from them which says, "We have noticed that you may have disposed of this transaction. Please tell us more about it."
All polite and nice. Yeah, I can only imagine CRA is not the group you want to be cheating anything out of. So that's for sure. You got to make sure that all your I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
For sure.
You know what, Natalie, this has been so enlightening for me. You know, I can't admit to being as passionate about taxes as you, but I know that it's so important to go to somebody that is so well-informed and educated. And if anybody out there is considering real estate, or you have clients that are in real estate, you know, just make sure that they're talking to an accountant that has a lot of knowledge in taxes and real estate, like Natalie does. Natalie, is there a way that people can get in touch with you if they have questions?
Absolutely. I respond to my emails very, very quickly. So again, my email is Natalie, which is Natalie at taxwelldone.com. Or I can be reached on the phone, 416-895-7749.